Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Garrett Rice, 25 years of career experience, Division Chief of Training with the Colony Fire Department in Texas. Firefighting wasn't in Garrett's scope of practice, but he had a friend invite him to come by the station, and as many other guests I've had on, once he entered in the halls of the firehouse, that's all he needed. The mindset Garrett has is a testament to who you're around. If you are aspiring to be an officer or current one, regardless if it's company or chief, this is a must listen to if you want to grow as a better person, whether it be father, mother, significant other, or firefighter. If you're into the job, after listening to this episode, it'll make you want to run through a wall due to how truthful Garrett speaks when it comes to how an organization should operate. One of my favorite quotes from Garrett is, "If you want a longer leash, train." With that, I present Garrett Rice.
Hey there. My name is Garrett Rice. I'm a division chief of training with the Colony Fire Department. Just moved into that position this year. First staff position after 25 years on the line and being in firehouses. I got my start at age 16 in San Clemente, California, with the Orange County Fire Authority. And I had a great mentor there, firefighter Kurt Bittinger, who helped bring a number of us up into the fire service. And so from age 16 until about 21, I was involved with that agency as an explorer who rode along and burned up his weekends hanging around the firehouse and trying to learn this thing, this trade that we have. And then later on as a paid call fireman with Crew 57, that was a Type 2 hand crew, and doing that for that agency. Made my way out to Texas, and have been here ever since. Never went back home to California, and have made my career and my family and all of that here in the great state of Texas.
Okay. So was becoming a firefighter always the goal for you?
No, I wanted to be a rock and roll drummer, but then the problem was I was much too realistic, right? You know, I think I had a better chance of being a major league ball player than probably a rock and roll drummer. And I had a friend say, "Hey, man, come check out this fire department thing." And I thought, well, you know, what is that? That's kind of weird. And so I went with them to a meeting for the Explorer group one night. And I mean, the minute you walk into the firehouse, you could smell it, you know, and it just all the senses hit. And that was that. I mean, I went home that night, told my family I was going to become a fireman, and I had never looked back.
Okay. But why not become a firefighter in California? Like, how did you choose Texas?
So this is a ways back. I graduated high school in 96. And at that time, there was a number of folks that wanted to be in the fire service. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I go through the local academy out there. It was a college-based academy and do all of the things. And I'm trying to get all of my stuff together so that I can qualify and start taking tests and get your EMT. And anyways, long story short, some other people wanted that job. And, you know, I think the smallest test I took at that time was for the city of Anaheim, which I was a reserve fireman for a little bit. And 1,200 people took that test. They hired two.
Wow.
And the largest I think I took was LA County. And I want to say 30,000 took that test in the convention center over the course of like a week. You know, LA City, 15,000, Long Beach, 8,000. I mean, the numbers were just daunting. And to be a 18 to 21 year old kid, it was hard to stand out in a crowd, you know. And really what I needed was some life experience. I needed to just age, you know, or go to paramedic school or do something else. And ultimately, you know, I was pretty hungry for it. In 2 years, I tested for, I think when I got hired in Texas for my career job, it was the 60th application that I had put in. So, there was a service that you had back then. I mean, they didn't have, I guess they barely had the internet, but you got these almost like postcards in the mail, and it would tell you who was testing. It was called, I think, Perfect Firefighter Candidate. And I subscribed to that service, and you'd get these things. And I mean, I tested all up and down the state, tested into Arizona, tested into Nevada a number of times, and finally saw that, man, it looked like there was a bunch of organizations hiring in Texas. And they just didn't quite have the numbers that wanted to go into the business. And so, you want something bad enough, you give it a go. Me and two buddies came out and all got hired. And ultimately, they ended up going back a couple years after gaining some experience. And my wife and I, we did the opposite. We doubled down and settled in and set up roots, and the rest is history.
Okay. And so upon moving to Texas and applying, I'm assuming you got a letter or a phone call that the colony wanted you.
So I wish I had started there. I don't, that's not my upbringing. No, I came out and I got hired in the Dallas Fire Department and started there and did a couple years there with Dallas. Coming up in the business, I had seen in California both sides of the spectrum. I worked for Orange County Fire Authority, which is a large organization. And I also worked in West Covina as a reserve fireman for a couple of years, which I think they're now county. But that was a five house department, so I'd seen both sides of the spectrum. And initially, when we came out here, we got hired with Dallas, and I did that. But I'll tell you, to move to a state and have no family and have no, not a lot of friends, and not have a closeness, a 55 station department wasn't really ideal for me, And so from there, I moved to a department east of Dallas called Rowlett, and I did a number of years there. And that was at the time when I got hired. I think I got the third station to full staff, right? So it was much to go from 55 stations to three, right? And then I lived in that same city. Like, that's how I figured out that I might want to work for that department was, I lived there. I could see the firehouse. It was five houses down from my house, And so I went to work there and promoted up through the ranks, and ultimately was a captain. And then one day I got a phone call from a friend who was the ops chief for the Colony Fire Department. He said, "Hey man, we're going outside for a BC, and I think maybe you should put in for it." And I said, "Yeah, I just passed on a BC spot where I work, so why would I don't think I want to work for you, And he goes, "Nah, I think we're doing some things different, And I said, "I'm good, man." And I hung up the phone, and my wife, who's the smarter of the two of us, said, "Who was that?" And I explained, and she said, "Are you nuts? Just go have a cup of coffee, go have a lunch, go figure out what this thing is." And so I called him back and said, "Hey man, I'm willing. Let's talk, or let's have lunch and let's meet and see what this thing's all about." And so I went up to the colony, and he drove me around. He showed me their last number of fires. I got to talk with him and with Chief Thompson, and have some lunch and kind of figure out what they were looking for in this position, what they needed from this person, and those things just linked up. And that's really kind of a tale of my career was, I've kind of done it both ways, and moving to the colony was a little more about being intentional and kind of figuring out where you want to be and what you want to be associated with. And I really have no regrets having made that move. And I've now been there for this year in August will be 10 years. And so kind of a blink of an eye,
Okay. Couple questions.
Okay.
That get on Dallas. You said you were there for a couple of years, and I get the whole not having family around, but was it difficult to make that decision to go from Dallas to Rowlett as far
Immensely, yeah.
as because your years?
Super stressful. Yeah, I mean, when I went through fire school, yeah, you make bonds. I mean, I still talk and hang out with guys from then, from 25 years ago. You make those bonds, and yeah, I had to figure out what was right for me and my family. And we had to part ways. I think the world of that organization. There's still always that, shoulda, coulda, woulda. But ultimately, without taking that step, I wouldn't have landed in Rowlett. Without Rowlett, I wouldn't have landed in the colony. And I'll be honest with you, it's a pretty dang good place to be. I work with some of the best in our profession. We're an aggressive agency. I get to do the things I've always dreamt of doing in training and in development, and we're willing to try new things. And so, yeah, I don't know. I mean, you just kind of got to be happy with your journey and your walk and where you ended up,
Okay. So you get to Rowlett. How long did it take for you to decide, and why did you decide to start moving up those ranks?
It took me a minute. I didn't I was eligible for a test year 2, year 4, and year 6, and I passed on all of them. And I just thought, man, I want to be a career fireman, And I don't know what happens at that like year 6 to year 8 for a lot of people, but you kind of get big for your britches, You kind of got it all figured out. I always equate that year, like that 6 to 8 year guy, is like having a teenager, right? They know everything. You can't tell them anything, And I was probably definitely, that person. And I had a captain there at the department kind of snap into me one day, and he's like, "Man, what are you doing?" And it was one of those wake up calls that you look back now and you're grateful for, because he said, you had set out to do some different things. And anyways, you just kind of have to like circle back and take stock of where you were at, and then decide, am I going to be intentional about my career or my goals or my aspirations, or am I just going to fall into, well, I'll just be a fireman, Not that there's anything wrong with that. And I don't have a problem with career firemen. I think our business needs it. I think it's the keel that kind of keeps our ship upright. But it's not just like you can be the best, and I wasn't being the best. I think I was bored with the position, and ultimately needed a bigger challenge, And so I took a test year 8, promoted, and then 2 years later I was eligible again, and they had a captain's exam, and I sat for that and promoted as well. And so very quickly kind of rose through the ranks on that, and found myself as a, I think at the time I was a 31-year-old officer, which was, my first assignment to a truck as an officer. I'd been a fireman and a driver on that same apparatus. And then when I promoted, I moved over and made the B shift seat. And so the crew that I worked on, I'm now relieving, in the morning. But my driver and my fireman both could have been my fathers. You know what I mean? And so I had a lot to learn as an officer, and I'm grateful for, especially my driver Tommy, that kind of got me where I needed to be,
Okay. All right. With that being said, what does leadership, especially when you're the company officer, what does that look like and what does that mean to you? Because we have so many that look at it as a pay bump, a title, less work, and all the wrong reasons.
Well, there are reasons. Yeah, I don't, I mean, I guess for somebody they might be right, but not really necessarily for those of us that are in this thing, right? And in the craft and doing it. I think it would be the same. I always equate it to the family because it's really, it's a second family. I'll be honest, moving to staff, while my home life now is better, and my relationship and with my family and my wife is better, and we're tighter than we've ever been. It was a little bit like going through a divorce to leave the station, right? That's like our second family. So if we're going to use that as an example, then I would say, are you going to become a father for the same reasons, for the money and for the ego and for the, like, no, dude, it's nothing but work. You're signing up for just a bunch of work. And so that's the wrong reasons, right? And so, yeah, I think you have to be true to your intentions. And it's difficult. It's one of these things where so much leadership in the fire service, I feel like, is based off of, I call it landmine leadership, right? So we don't teach people how to be leaders. We just teach you where not to step, right? Like, oh, I saw this guy and he did that. I ain't doing that one, and I ain't doing that one. It doesn't really teach us the bounds of what we're capable or what a company is possible of doing or gaining or being part of. It just says I'm not going over to that area. And so I saw things differently. For me, I shocked, I'm sure I shocked the system. I challenged a lot of things, and I've always been that way. I don't know that I'm a change agent, but for me, the status quo has never been acceptable. And I'm always willing to look outside the box or look outside our examples for other ways to do things. I remember being an officer, and we would go shop at Target, and anyways, there was a kid that was looking at the fire truck, right? When we came out, we're pushing the cart out, and so we're showing him the fire truck, and I said, "Well, hey, just jump in there, and so we put him up in the seat. I said, "Hey, Tommy, buzz him around buzz him around the parking lot, hit the siren, and hit the lights, and let him have a day of it, And he's like, "Can we do that?" And I said, "Yeah, we can do anything we want to do, And I just have always kind of taken that approach towards most of the things that we do, And I did the same thing, I think, with great success as a BC, which was, I told my officers, "Man, just do it. We'll talk later if you went outside the bounds or it was something that you shouldn't have been doing, but you need to feel empowered. Like, we've given you a firehouse. We've given you an apparatus. I've given you people's lives to take care of. Like, you should be able to make these decisions, And so, while I don't want to hand out rides to kids all day long, right? That one kid, that was a special thing. That cost us nothing. It makes everybody feel great. Like, why would you not do it? So that was kind of, I guess, my motivation was just for being able to do it different, and it's not a fun road when you decide to be kind of a trailblazer or try new things or step out from the crowd. Like, you're going to get it from both ends, right? You're going to get it from the bosses, and you're going to get it from the line guys who go, "That's not what we do. That's not, we don't do it that way," right? I remember one of the, I had a rookie in Rowlett, a kid named, we nicknamed him Red. He was a redheaded, just a great dude though. But anyways, we had made a call, a structure fire call, and I'm pulling up first due, and there's nothing showing. I mean, it's going to be just a smells and bells, whatever. And I reached back and kind of looked back at him. I said, "Hey, Red, get a line. Go ahead and get it to the door." And I jumped off the rig. I went to go do my 360 and go check out stuff. And he kind of sat there flabbergasted because there's no fire. We don't stretch for no reason. And he looked at the driver, Todd, and said, "Well, what do I do?" And he goes, "Well, I think Cap told you to get a line. I think I'd get a line." And he pulled the line and it got all jammed up in the shrubs and like it was a total mess, you know, and not a big deal. Like, so we went in, it ended up, I think, being a dryer fire. We ended up unplugging it, yanking it out. There wasn't much to it. But as the other companies were clearing up, driving by, they about broke their necks because there was a line on the ground. Like, we had never done that, you know? And the way I saw things was like, that didn't cost us anything. Just like the ride for the kid, that didn't cost us anything. In fact, it was a rep. And in fact, Red learned that a small shrub can jam him up pretty easy, right? And then the second part of that was, I've always felt like a lot of our problems in our business is because of a lack of work, right? You know, the fire services is a lot of the time in relaxation mode. We got our feet up, and we, you know, we've fallen into the recliners. And so teams, they require work. That's the whole word, right? Teamwork. So what I found was that when we started working together and reloading hose and then talking about how that went and then trying to fix it, like, that's how the team got built, was through the drilling and through the repetition. And so I just felt like I was onto something. Now, while it worked with my team, there was so much to overcome with the organization because they just weren't there yet. You know what I mean? To be the one that was kind of starting to drive that or push that, like I said, you took it from both ends.
Okay. I'll ask that question afterwards. Okay. This next question, only answer it if you feel comfortable, because I never like to put the guest like in a weird position. But
Okay.
you see organizations that will hire from the outside instead of hiring within, like the Colony, you know, they went outside. And then if you look at social media, a lot of the comments are like, you know, what's up with that? You know, they got plenty of manpower pool, whatever the case may be. If you can explain in your opinion why sometimes organizations do that.
Yeah, that's a funny question. And it's just funny in the timing. I'm currently taking a course. It's like a public leadership course. It's through this master's program that I'm in, right? And the book that we've got, I forget the name. I don't have it offhand, but they give two examples of leadership, two different organizations. One was the Boston Housing Authority, and the other one is the Houston Police Department. And I'll sum it up quickly, but both of those leaders in those agencies, they had problems. The new leaders come in, and the Boston Housing Authority has to bring in an outsider because they did not have the personnel within to help him get where he needed to be. And then in the other example, the Houston Police Department, they were able to bring somebody up through the ranks who could see the vision of the new leader and was able to kind of grasp those things. So I would use that example when you ask that question why that is. It just depends on what it is. The you know obviously the chief of the organization or the leader of the organization is trying to accomplish. And I guess with Chief Thompson in the Colony Fire Department, you know, he had tested for BCs, and with where he was at in the culture and in trying to drive the agency towards one direction, the missing piece was not within the organization. And he felt like he needed to go outside. And that's a big risk because that could have completely backfired. You know, a lot of things have to happen right for us to all end up where we did. And so he took a big risk. You know, I'm grateful he did, but I think that's kind of it. I mean, it just really depends on maybe, you know, with whatever an organization's trying to succeed at or to grow at, you know, do you have somebody to take you there? You know, and I think he needed those examples I'm giving you where I was, you know, willing to kind of step out, you know, to come from the outside and then to say, hey, why are we doing that? Or, you know, why don't we look at this or that or whatever? A lot of the suggestions were better received, right? Because it was outside perspective. And you within your own organization, it's like being a prophet in your own land, right? So I was able to kind of come in and get some things done or help us get somewhere that maybe we couldn't have done by ourselves, you know? And it's it's not ideal, you know? I mean, I honestly feel like if we do it right, and I told him that in my interview, if we do it right, we never hire anybody else from the outside. And that's been my goal from day one, is to develop my replacement, develop the replacement of those below us. And you know, one of my officers just promoted. You know, I got to see him promote from in my 10 years there, he was a fireman for me, he was a driver for me, he was a captain for me, and he's now a BC in our department in 10 years. Like, so I feel like on those promises, like we're making good on that I was the last one that we were ever going to hire from the outside.
Understood. Okay. You know, which he, anyone that knows the colony and Chief Scott Thompson and that has heard him speak, you know, he's dubbed America's fire chief, a firefighter, a fireman's chief, firefighter's chief. I'm sure there are others out there that we just don't know because of how many different organizations there are in the United States. But how do you get an organization to where, I don't want to say exactly where the colony is, but as far as culture, people that actually care about the job, leadership, individuals that just want to be there, what are some steps that you could do to get there? Because looking at social media, you can see a lot of firefighters are hungry for an organization like that. And sometimes they're surrounded by just complacency, guys that just want to quickly rig checks, we'll quickly do a some sort of training, and then it's recliner time. They want to work on their side hustle, things like that.
Yeah. You know, it's depressing what I'm probably going to say, because I've seen it both ways, right? I was in the organization where I tried to create change from my position, you know, a little bit like Aaron talks about, you know, water boiling up from the bottom, right? And it works, but it's not without its challenges, and it's really difficult to steer the entire organization. You know, what I find happens in organizations like that, where it's not from the top down, is that you can create small little change within the parameters or within the bounds that they give you. You can hope to build a great team, but it'll always be you against them, right? Against all of the other people you're talking about. When we're deliberate about it, with, you know, Chief Thompson's example, you know, he was an architect of a culture, right? That's a different thing. So, you know, he has a thing on his in his office on a whiteboard that said, you know, start with the end in mind, right? If not this, then what, right? And so you kind of have to reverse engineer an organization and say, okay, where do we want to be? And where are we now? And then how do we, you know, from where we're at now to where we want to be, how many steps are there in getting there? And, you know, when he came into the colony, again, he was an outside guy. You know, he didn't come up in the colony. He had a number of departments under his belt. But when he came in, you know, he asked the guys, what do you want? What do you want to do? What do you want to be? And the guys said they wanted to be respected within the fire service, right? That was kind of it. Like they didn't want to. When they showed up to a fire, they didn't want, you know, another city putting their fire out. They wanted, you know, they wanted to be respected. They wanted to be good at what they wanted to do. Well, that's easy. Like, we'll just hold you to that, right? So you have to find the buy-in of what, you know, an agency wants or an organization wants, and then just hold them to those expectations, right? Create that culture and, you know, make the things that you want folks to be doing important and valuable. You know, if you want them to train, then reward training. You know, if you want them to wear their gear, then you know, all those things have to be encouraged. And it's a lot of little things that all have to go right to get you to that end goal. But I think the linchpin in all of it is, unfortunately, and this is the, like I said, the depressing part, it's the fire chief. They set the tone for everything. And, you know, I don't mean to put everything on these on any of these chiefs that are going to listen to this podcast or whatever, but it kind of starts with you, you know, and you kind of have to start there and empower your folks And be deliberate about it. If you don't like the way that your organization looks, then shake it up and reorganize it and redefine it and, put the work in.
Okay. Trying to get my bearings here because I mean it's truthful, and I know I've heard I've had discussions where people say you can't point one finger at one individual when you have like let's just say you have a roster of like 150 boots on the ground line personnel, but I truly believe that the person that's holding the title of chief can make the changes, can set the tone, can set the standards for sure.
Well, yeah, and what happens is if they do that, right? He says, "Hey, here's where we need to be." He fosters this environment, right, and cultivates it. Then now it's the ops chief job to meet that end, right? And he sits down with the BCs and goes, "Hey, this is where we need to be." And then the BCs have to own that, right, to their company officers, and their company officers have to sell this to the troops. And at any point when there's not buy-in, that's where it breaks down, and that's where we hold those folks accountable. And then you've got a decision, man. At the end of the day, wherever you are in the organization, if it's moving one direction and you're unwilling to go that direction, quit or retire. I mean, those are your only choices, if we're doing it right and if people are holding folks accountable, and that's, it should be accountable to things that are good and that are of value and that, make good on our promise. And a lot of folks want to go to the Super Bowl and be a championship team from, like I said, from the seat of a recliner. Like, dude, those things don't go hand in hand, and when you look back on like your time in high school or in anything, right? I use high school with like sports. You don't remember the coach that didn't give a shit. You remember the guy that got in your ass and made you better and held you to a standard and was tough as hell and you hated him at the time, but he's the only guy you remember. Right? And
Yes.
so for us to grow or to be better, you have to get uncomfortable. I think it's Jordan Peterson talks about the crab, right? The crab's got its hard exterior shell, but that shell is like a jail cell on it, right? It can only grow to the size of that shell. So it's got to molt, it's got to get rid of the shell. Well, it does so and it feels vulnerable. It goes under a rock until it can regrow a larger shell and then grow. Like that's all of our organizations, right? Anytime somebody comes in with a differing idea, says, "Hey, we're going to start stretching on steel alarms," right? It makes everybody uncomfortable. Well, we don't do that, And then for anybody to do it, to say, "Well, I'm willing to try. I'm willing to be number two on that. Let's give it a go." You're taking off your armor. Now you're becoming vulnerable. Now you might get made fun of, right? But it's the only way that we really grow.
Love it. Okay. In your opinion, I've asked this. I've had conversations and have asked this to other guests too, and even outside this podcast, you always hear change comes with rank. So, like, in order to affect change, you need to promote. In your opinion, do you believe that is true?
No, I mean, it's true in a roundabout way. I think rank gives you a seat for the change to happen easier, if that makes any sense. But if we're doing it right and we're putting the right people in the right seats, ultimately, and what I hope to be a part of is an organization, and I'll give you a great example where change can come from anywhere, right? Any seat. We just hired this kid. I say young kid. He feels like it, but his name's James, and he drives a Tesla. I think it drives him to work. It's just different. I'm just shy of 50, and like it's now starting to feel like the fire service that I was kind of coming up in. I now can see me as like the guys who were bringing me up. It's a weird place to be. I feel like the old guy. But anyways, this young kid has started with us. He hadn't even completed a year. And he looked at our bumper load and said, "Hey man, I think we could do this different." Now talk about the courage that it takes to be less than a year in the Colony Fire Department, where our guys kind of have their shit put together as far as like how we do things and what we do. And you're going to come in less than a year and challenge our people. And I was grateful he was with an officer that said, "Hey, I don't know, set it up. Let's pull it. Let's figure it out. Let's run the test. Let's see if it's better." And they did, and they allowed him that. And ultimately, it rolled out to all three engine companies, and they changed the load. Like, how awesome is that? And so I don't think rank is the only way, but rank is the way if you're going to pave the way for everyone else. Does that make sense? Like, you got to have leaders in a position. Like, a fireman can have an idea, but if everybody above him smacks him down and says, "Absolutely not," because that could have been the other response was, "Hey, buddy, you've been here 5 minutes. How about shut the you what up and go sit down?" Right. But we had an officer that was willing to just explore and kind of be, curious and say, "I don't know, let's try it. We're not, we're here for 48 hours. Let's just do it." And they did. And they put it through the paces, ran it out to the other companies who also could have said, "Listen, who's this kid speaking up?" And they didn't. So I say that to say it took a lot of people above him to support that effort. Right. And so we showed in that example that, rank isn't about it's not about everything, but it is about something. Like if you want to move at a faster pace in an organization, you got to have the right leaders in the right seats to support the guys with the best ideas. Otherwise, the ideas don't see the light of day.
That's right. No, you're 100% right, because I can see that going bad in so many ways. And I'm not sure if it's because of the culture, the generational differences, or depending on who you're talking to, because when I was coming up in the fire service, it was shut up, just listen. Just listen. You can ask a question if we prompt you to the way it was. But now, I'm a firm believer, like, it doesn't matter if you got 6 months to 25 years, everybody has something that they can bring to the table, but we have to be willing to listen.
I agree. Yeah. It's a change in thought processes to start looking at your people as assets, right? Like you hired them for what's between their ears, for their ability, for all of those things, and then to not utilize it seems kind of silly. Now there's a time and a place, right? Like, we're not going to get out on the fire ground and then this is where you're going to start reimagining things and trying new things and something we've never trained on, like that ain't the time and the place for it. But at the kitchen table or out on the drill ground or any of those things, that's where it has to be acceptable. We had a BC process a couple weeks ago, and one of the candidates gave a presentation about trying to create an environment where we allow for failing forward, right? And I love the idea behind it, like. And I support that. And but I had to ask him. I said, "Man, I'll be honest with you. When as a chief officer, when have I not allowed for failure? I support failure all the time. Now, I don't like it on the fire ground because I feel like we should train better for that. But even on the fire ground, like when has somebody got in trouble for doing something or failing or any of those things? It's dynamic and it's difficult. And so failure is a part of our job, right?" And so I challenged him a little bit, and I hope that he runs with it. But I said, what you're trying to push or encourage with this failing forward is for the chief officers to create an environment where we allow for failure. But my question back to you, Cap, was, are we creating environments in our firehouses that allow for failure? Or are we having the kind of environments where you don't want to be the fish in the barrel? Right. So it's chicken or the egg. Is it the guys at the top that aren't allowing for failure? Or is it that we ride people like a backpack when they come in and nobody wants to seem dumb in front of their peers, right? And so they get super defensive when you ask them questions or when you hold them accountable or when you say, hey, you know what, why'd you do this or why'd you do that? Well, you're asking, you know, you're making me look stupid in front of people. It's like, well, which is it? And so I kind of pushed back on them a little bit and said, man, I think you have more control over creating an environment that allows for failure at the company officer level than I ever will as a chief officer, you know?
Definitely.
And that example of allowing for that hose load, that could have gone horribly wrong. It could have been awful. That kid had to have a ton of vulnerability. So that is a better example of allowing for failure. And it ultimately didn't end in failure, it ended in success. But how many other times would the company or would the guys beat that person down? And so when we want to create environments that allow for failure, like I said, it's more up to the guys than it ever is to the boss. The boss isn't the one that defines that, you know, because the guys will go, well, I don't want to get in trouble. Like, we're not writing people up. Like, that's not happening. Like, tell me the last person that got written up on a fire or got, you know, reprimanded or, you know, sent home. Like, that, it's just not happening. We make mistakes all the time, you know.
Okay, I love it. I love it. How does the colony go about developing their officers? Because it's very easy to, if you have a captain's position or lieutenant's position open, whatever the case may be, okay, we're going to do a written test. All right, written test is done. You go through some sort of fire problem scenario, maybe a personnel issue. Okay, you check the boxes. All right, this person is going to get promoted. And then a lot of times with most organizations, once that happens, it's okay, we've kind of given you the tools. Hopefully, you're ready. See you. Bye. And then we never develop it. Swear. So, like, let's just say, for example, if I was around an officer that really didn't do much, if you had to roll the dice, chances are the way that candidate saw that officer, he or she might do the same thing. Going forward. So, what are some steps or what are some things that the colony does to develop their officers?
Well, one of the things that we do that's different because we're not civil service, we're not bound by, you know, any kind of contract or anything like that is part of our promotional process, really a lot of our process is very subjective. And there'll be some people probably that would argue, you know, I don't want a subjective process. Well, our folks do. And part of the process involves being rated by those who like, let's say you're promoting to AO, to apparatus operator, that there's going to be officers or apparatus operators that are going to rate who you are as a person, right? Like your knowledge, skills, and abilities, your attitude, all of those things. Right. So what it is you can't come in and be a complete jackass and then think you're going to write the test and promote, right? And we weigh things fairly evenly across the board so that, you know, the written is a portion of it, but it's not everything. Right. So there's the process. As far as the development, a lot of that is through the step up roles, right? And trying to get into their head and mind space a little bit. You know, we try to host some officer camps. This year we're putting on our first AO camp where we're going to kind of come down one level and start approaching those AOs. You know, our organization as it grew required so much step up when people were off. Like you had to have a guy who could step into the next rank. And so my frustration as a training chief has been, you know, when you promote to driver, it's less about being the driver and more about you starting to work to on your step up, right? To fill this role. And my point is I want, again, you know, I'm going to challenge the organization a little bit. It's like, what if that person never steps up? Like, do they have to, right? Do like they promoted to apparatus operator. That's a very different position than company officer. Like we can write it into that you know some of the responsibilities are that you're going to do this in his absence, but we could also just take that out, right? And my point is that if we took that out, if we took those responsibilities out, if we said, you know, apparatus operators don't have to step up unless you want to, right? And the same thing with the company officer. Company officer doesn't have to fill the battalion chief role unless they want to. And then the want to part, I'm trying to redefine what it looks like for us to develop them into the future leaders. See, I would rather take, you know, we got 15 captains, and I don't know how many want to be BCs, right? Maybe, I don't know, let's say five, right? A third of them want to be BCs. I would rather focus on five people than try to throw information and training at 15, where 10 of them don't want it anyways. They never wanted the responsibility. You know what I mean? They don't want to move past the company, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. So I'm trying to redefine that right now. Chief and I are going to meet and kind of basically look at, okay, when you promote, you have a year of probation, and then after the probation, once you're off, what's the development for the next rank, right? What does that look like? What do we want you to have? What classes are we going to pay for? What training and what exposure do we want you to have? And then once you gain all of that, you're able to step up, and the step up is what allows you to take the test to promote, right? And some people may say, hey, I do want to step up and I want to do that, but I don't ever really want to take that job. That's also okay, you know. But I don't see anything wrong with even being a senior fireman that says, hey, I don't want to drive the truck. Like, that ain't my job, right? I want to be really good at going to the roof or stretching lines, you know, and I just have never seen myself in that role. And I think a lot of the time we push people so hard because of the need to have this person in that
Yes,
position
sir.
that we end up putting them in a position they should have never been in the first place. You
Sir.
know,
Yes, sir.
so that's kind of, I mean, as far as development goes, and you know, I've only been in this, you know, I was overtraining as an ancillary duty for the 9 years that I was in the BC's office. But it was difficult to deliver for a whole organization. Now that I'm on staff and I go in, you know, throughout the week, I can kind of be a little more intentional with my time and my energy and meeting it for the whole organization. And so I'm trying to reimagine our development. And I want to create a roadmap from day one until you retire that allows people to understand the path towards promotion or towards success or towards whatever. And that there's multiple paths, right? Kind of like a choose your own adventure book. I'm dating myself, but like, you know, you can read this page and go this direction, or you can go this direction, right? There's a lot of different directions. And I would just like to see our organization move towards that. So that's something that we're looking at. We're looking at redefining the reading criteria. And then, you know, a lot of the tests and the stuff that we do, you know, I forget how many source material there was. It was like, I don't know, 13 or 15 or something like that. Like, it's just too much. So the question is, what can we take out of a promotional process that we can put into other processes? So, for instance, like during a promotional process, do I need an apparatus operator to show proficiency in city policies right now? Or could I test the probationary firefighter on city policies and then never have to go back through them again? You know what I mean? Like, we can put things at different parts of a career, because honestly, by that time, when you're promoting to driver or apparatus operator or captain, you should know those already, or should be able to at least get into them in discretionary time and figure out what answer you need to whatever problem. Where I want to test the person is when they are new to the organization and they don't know about them at all, you know? So take that out of the promotional process, put it into other processes, and just try to figure that career path out a little bit better.
No, that was spot on. I've had conversations with individuals that we've had a little bit of, not I want to say arguments, but it gets a little heated when they're like, well, sometimes the organization is going to want you to move up. And it's like, why? There are people that are made to drive, that want to drive that are good drivers. There are people that don't want to do that role, but then they are looked at, well, you're going to have to. We need you to step up. And it's like, going from firefighter to relief driver, that's a lot of responsibility. You're driving a vehicle that's like 80,000 to whatever, 100 something thousand pounds,
Right.
code three, pedestrians, just it's a lot. And for to get them checked off, it's, hey, we're just going to give you a quick, anybody could teach anybody how to pump. Pumping's not hard, but it's the troubleshooting. It's what happens if this goes, then what's the next step? And I feel like we, especially with from what I've seen, the younger generation that's being hired that has zero fire experience. I'm talking about no volunteer. They just decide, hey, I want to be a fireman. They're trying it out. And then we're pushing, hey, we need you to move up. We need you to become a checked off driver. And it's like, what are we rushing these individuals for?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, to me, just because you're short on whatever field or whatever position in your organization, you shouldn't put that on the newest person. That's not right.
No. And I think at that point, you pay the overtime or you fill the slot or you do whatever you got to do, and then ultimately, if you have openings and you don't have people that want to do it, I mean, you have to eventually look at that as well, or talk about how we're not developing that or cultivating that or whatever. But like an apparatus operator, at least to me, is it's way more than just the step up officer, right? I give you a good example. Like I was at I had a flat yesterday on my city car, and so I had to go into the shop. And when I was there, our truck company pulled in, and they're on a reserve rig, and they had a hose that ran one of the back brake lines, had a like a leak, and it was leaking so bad that the tanks and all of the jockey pumps and all that stuff won't keep up with it. And so when they're driving, it was dropping it below like 70 or 60 PSI, whatever it is that it basically was engaging the damn emergency brake, right? And so they're smoking through this thing. Anyways, the company and that apparatus operator, troubleshot it, right? They didn't just say, I don't know, it's got a check engine light, and then put the ticket, as my buddy Chief Dahl says, in the magic box, right? You just say, I don't know, it's got a problem, and then it's somebody else's problem. They diagnosed it, figured out what the thing was, got it up to fleet, showed the mechanic right where they found the leak, and the guy was pulling the hose as I was there and installing a new hose to get them back in service. And so I say that to say, our apparatus operators should be mechanically sound. I'm not expecting that you can wrench on these things, but you should be able to troubleshoot the systems and understand how, an internal combustion motor and some of these things work hand in hand. In the same way to be said about being an officer, it's got a different set of skills, right? It's not just the substitute teacher for the day when you step up into that role. Right. I don't know, caps off, right? Because we're gonna have a fun day. Like, no, man. Like, you're taking, like you said, in the same sense, when you're driving and there's pedestrians and there's big vehicle, well, the same thing is to be said about stepping into the officer role. Like, dude, like whether we succeed today or we fail means somebody's life or not, right? Like, and so are you good with that? Have you trained towards that? Have you prepared yourself for that? Has the organization prepared you for that? And so I think we just have to be careful about doing that. A lot of these ideas that I had came from when I started to ride my captains with me to train them for step up, and I realized like how much I had to pass on to them. And we were only given the guys, I think, three tours, right? So 6 days of time with me as a BC. And it's like, it's not enough. Like, so what I ended up having to start doing was fabricating problems. Like, and it was a little cruel, but it's the way that I work. So, like, I would just tell them day one, here's the cell phone, the BC cell phone, and here's the radio, and get in the front seat, and I'm going to be over here if you need me, right? I'm feeding you to the wolves. And I'd let them, because the challenge with being the chief for the day is all the things that are thrown at you, right? So with one of my captains, I put him in that spot, and then I called one of the other captains. I said, "Hey, can you do me a favor? Can you call the BC phone here in a second and tell him that you've just been in a wreck in the fire engine and that you're out at this location and PD's there and blah 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 blah." So, and I didn't tell anybody that it was, just make believe. And so that officer called him and said, "Hey man, we just wrecked the rig." And you could see his eyes get huge, like, "Oh crap, now what do I do?" And it's like, "Okay, we got to work through this so that you can be successful when this is going to happen, And so, I mean, I ran it to the umpteenth degree. He had to go over there. Then he realized there wasn't anything wrong with it, but they had already drawn a sketch of the accident and put everything into all the forms. And, now what do we got to do? Well, I guess I got to get him a piss test. Well, how do I do that? Like, you just have to create those things kind of in the land of make believe, but do so in a way that they weren't expecting. And when I talked to that officer, he's like, "That was awesome. Like, I was challenged, right?" And you need to do that for everybody. And so the difficult thing is, like, the minute you do it, like, it's out, right? It's kind of like a drill. Like, everybody comes back to the kitchen table and says, "Oh, well, we did this and we did this." And then by the sixth one of the week, everybody's got it licked, right? So you kind of have to change it up a little bit more and be creative with it. But that's how I approached that. And I just realized in doing that, some folks probably don't need to be there,
But it's the fact that you and the organization have thought ahead of the curve, because I forgot who said it, but it's the best term that I've heard. You have some organizations that are just inbred, and inbred because of the fact that they don't want change. When you kind of ask them, "Hey, have we thought about this?" their response to you automatically is, "That's too much work." And if an organization says that's too much work, then obviously you want to stay in what I call the Stone Age.
Well, you don't want growth, that's for sure. And we're only here once. Regardless of your religious beliefs, like, you're only going to be on this planet once. You know what I mean? You've got one shot at 30 years doing this job. Like, I don't know. You just want to be okay? You just want to get through it? I always think about the scene from Shawshank where the guy gets out and they carve their name in the top of the thing, so and so was here. And a lot of our people do that. I was here. Yeah, but you didn't have any meaningful change or add any value. Like, you just took up space, right? And that was always my goal as a BC, was figuring out, because I came into an organization, I had to do two things. One was, be the formal leader, but the other was I had to learn all the people. Like, so I was a candidate, I was a new person, a recruit, a rookie, and I was also the guy that was formally in charge at the same exact time. And so I had to expedite these processes. And so I did a lot of interviews with my personnel, and I sat down with them and I figured out what made them tick, and I figured out what their goal or their career aspirations were. And I started matching people to opportunities and getting them a seat with the boss to say, "Hey, could we do this?" Right? So, like, I had one of my guys, John Crow, great human being, got a passion so much for people, and he's got a strong faith, and he says, "Hey, I think I want to look at a chaplain program." And I said, "Cool, what's that look like?" And he's like, "I don't know." And I said, "Well, let's figure it out, And so he did. He put the work in. And then I just made sure that I got him a seat with the boss to sit down and go, "Hey, dude, let's do this." And now he's our chaplain, and he's done a wonderful job. It's our job as leaders to say yes more than we say no. No is what you're talking about, right? Because it looks like work. You just say no, like, "Oh, cool, that was it. We're done now. What's for lunch?" Right? And you move on. But yes requires work. Yes requires support. Yes requires, I may have to get dirty. Tim Sandoval, one of our guys, wanted to, he's very passionate about our leather helmets. Well, leather helmets come with a myriad of problems. And especially in our state, they get inspected. And so we have to have somebody who's willing to paint them and keep up with them and do all that stuff. He says, "Man, I want to do that." I said, "Go research it. Tell us what we need. What paint do we need to buy? Is it special?" And he had to like reach out to people in the fire service who were doing restorations and all that stuff. And now he's our guru. He's our guy, I think if you give people just a little space to own like what's important to them, it's what makes an organization great. And everybody's got a different, there's a guy in your organization that wants to be a piper, that wants to do the pipe and drum. Cool. There's a group for you. There's a guy that wants to, train and be into all of, there's groups for that. And I think that's the whole thing to this is it's more than just coming in and putting your stuff on the rig.
No, I'm with you 100%, and I think for some that are just so used to the way it is, they see it as, well, if I allow this person to do said things, then either they feel like, maybe they feel like that person will take the limelight away from them, or they'll end up taking it all. But I know individuals that have, they have a passion in something, right? And then they go to that prospective officer that's in charge and go, "Hey, I would like to help with this," and automatically shut down. No. And then when the no happens, the rest of the organization sees how slow it takes to get things moving forward. And it's like, you wonder why after a while, either the hard chargers leave or the hard chargers fall into that complacency role. And then everybody's just kind of scratching their heads. And it's like, we're doing it to ourselves.
You gotta, you gotta let people have some room for some growth, right? You just have to match that opportunity to what they're passionate about, and then our job is to kind of keep them within the lines, and help them be successful, like not to beat them down, but to say, hey, before you present this, I had Bryce Campbell, another guy, super tuned up, came to us from another fire department, had like 12 years on the job, so he comes in and he's not, he's a rookie, but he's not like he was fixing to be a lieutenant. Like he's tuned up. But he wanted to put together a fitness initiative and wanted to get us back doing our own physical agility in our own organization. I said, "Man, write it up. Figure it out what it looks like. Put this thing together." And then I'd say, "Hey, get it to me and let me massage it. Let me help out and make suggestions." And then I just got him a seat with the boss. "Hey man, let's schedule you a meeting." And I'm grateful that I got a chief that's willing to hear those things and to see that. I had another member that wanted to be on the Texas task force and he was putting in a lot of time, and taking classes on his own. I said, "Hey, what can we do as an organization to help support you?" And he said, "Well, I need to go to this class or this class." I said, "Cool, send me the bill. Let's send you." And now he's on the Texas task force. And so we've got a resource now within our organization that's tapped into state level, rescue stuff that like it's going to benefit us. And it's just about always matching all these opportunities to the folks that you're around. We did the same thing with our medic. We separated our everyone in our organization, pretty much top to bottom, is a paramedic. But we decided to, when we had to grow, instead of fighting with every other fire department around, we went ahead and decided to staff our ambulances with paramedics that are just the paramedics. That's what they do. And when they're off, one of our firemen moves over and rides with them. So our guys ride the box a whole lot less than probably other agencies. I know, when I was a young guy in my 8 years, I maybe rode the engine once or twice a month because I was on the ambulance most shifts because they just had to have a paramedic. It's the way it went. But there was a lot in the same way that we had never done that before. And so my role in that was just helping support them and figure out what it looked like for us to be successful, and their ideas had to shake out the same way. We had to give them space to grow and to be kind of content experts about the stuff they do. And I'm telling you, they're good. They're really good. Like I used to be like, if I go down, I want my guys on me. And now I'm like, if I go down, I don't want a knuckle dragging fireman. Like I want one of our medics because these guys are freaking phenomenal. They're able to hold conversations with doctors that I can't hold. And so they're so much more of a paramedic than I am, but we had to allow for that growth. And then ultimately Chief was able in the years later to get them a career path. And now we've got field training paramedics. That's a promotion. We've got EMS lieutenants. That's a promotion. And ultimately, we will eventually promote one of our lieutenants into the EMS chief role, right? And they'll probably take that seat. And I just feel like the environment that I was trying to create, they bought into. And I will tell you, out of all those promoted positions, the folks off my battalion were the ones that took the bulk share of those promotions, right? And I think it's just back to creating an environment where you allow for those things and where that's not, back to the failure part, we can fail our people by just not allowing them to try, you know?
Definitely. My question to you is, how did you figure out that's the kind of mindset you want? Because it's very easy. You said it earlier. It's very easy for you to be in the position that you're in. You can hear it and be like, no, and then move on to the next. So either what happened or what I don't want to say what developed your mind, but how did you become the way you are with your position and how you look at things?
A great question. I think it's kind of twofold. One is I did a little bit of sports growing up, but I'm not really the sports guy, neither here nor there if you are. I just, I dabbled in it, played some baseball, wrestled, did football one season, realized that all the girls were at the beach and two-a-days kind of sucked. And so, anyways, but growing up in Southern California, I kind of bought into the sports that were kind of solo individual ones. And so, skateboarding or BMX racing or surfing or snowboarding, they're not really team sports, And so they're difficult to like, I don't think people use those as examples for, how to develop, really well as a leader. But what I'll tell you is like the patience it takes to pull off a trick on a skateboard. Right. All of those repetitions, I think Malcolm Gladwell talks about the 10,000 hours, and in the book Blink, it takes 10,000 hours to get mastery. And in our profession, we're trying to build masters of this thing. And so that served me well, that mindset. Excuse me. That I got from skateboarding, really. Just that patience to, I mean, every day go out and try to do a kickflip and keep trying to do a kickflip and keep in your shins being busted and broken and not being able to figure it out and throwing the skateboard and then having to come back the next day and try it all over again. So I applied that to the skills that we do, like, with ladders, I've really tried to master that. I felt like that was always a thing in our business that was kind of like they were on the rig, but we didn't really do a whole lot with them. Everything was really focused on the line. So I really dove into ladders, in anything, I was just able to kind of break things down to these microscopic kind of skill sets. So I think that's the first part, and I think you have to be, I don't think 10,000 hours is the number. That doesn't take into account like talent. Some people just have a natural talent. I've worked with some dudes that are clutch, like they can't screw up anything. They're just good at it. And so for them, it takes a lot less time than maybe it takes me to learn something. You have to be very deliberate about it. And then the quality of the training or the practice or whatever it is, that all has to go into it. The second part of that for the mindset is probably that like hindsight, right? Like, so every year that I age, I realize I didn't know what I thought I knew. You know what I mean? And so if you can be honest and humble about that and just recognize it, then you allow for greater outside thought to maybe influence you, right? You don't feel challenged by it. If you're solid in what you think, then you should be willing to listen to something. And then it and if it doesn't hold water, then you just move on, right? But if there's some merit to it, you may have to consider like everything you knew or thought maybe wasn't the best, you know, and be willing and open to that. And I've always kind of been open and willing to just that way of thinking, you know. It served me well, you know. But it normally comes through a lot of failures and a lot of doing things the hard way and catching it on the chin, and you go, boy, there's got to be a better way to do this, you know.
Definitely.
So
Okay. Okay.
it's this is the challenge. You know, I'll circle back to the family thing. You know, this is the challenge, whether we're talking about being a fireman or being a father, right? Or a husband or any of those things is, you know, in that role as the leader of your family in both senses, right? You're trying to coach somebody. Like, I'll give you an example. I'm trying to, you know, coach my daughter right now. It with just life, right? And it's difficult to get through to her, I'm on your team. Like, I'm coaching you and your performance, and I'm trying to get us to the Super Bowl. Like, I know what that looks like because I've got time and age on you. And I think it's the same way in our business if we do it right, right? We, as leaders, we look at our folks and we own them like we own our family. We say, man, you know, I can see what you're good at. I'm trying to line you up with opportunities and with experiences. But sometimes they dig in because we're managing teenagers, right? They're going to do it their own way, you know? And my middle son has already realized this at a really young age, but he kind of turned a corner. He's now in the Coast Guard and he realized, oh crap, you're on my team, right? And it's totally changed our relationship now, you know, to where he solicits advice. He calls me almost daily. Like, we talk all the time. That's that mentorship that we're looking for in the fire service, right? And you just got to keep at it, you know, and they're ready for it. Whether we're talking about kids or firemen, they're ready for it when they're ready for it. You know, you can't force it, you know, and you can't give up either. I mean, that's the tough part. You know, sometimes you got to, okay, you go your own way and I'm still here, you know?
Okay. Before I get to my last question, I remember seeing not too long ago there was a video of you in full gear, shoulder throwing a 35. Not there aren't very many, at least from the individuals I know in my circle, or you know, through my passing, you don't see very many chiefs doing that. But to me, that speaks volumes on your mindset, your work ethic, but also it shows your firefighters like this individual's engaged, because it's very easy to have a title and hey, I expect you meet like if I was a chief talking to you, if you were my fireman, I expect you to do this. But when the firefighter sees it from their perspective of their chief putting in work, to me, my personal opinion, that makes that individual go so much harder for that person.
I hope so. I mean, you know, I don't know. I mean, I just of the mindset I would never ask somebody to do something that I wasn't willing to do. You know, I struggled with that when I was a captain. I had a BC that didn't wear his gear on recs and on scene, you know, and that was in the policy. So my guys would be like, why do we have to have our stuff on? And, you know, that's a difficult thing when you have a leader at the top that is not following what he, you know, needs to be emulating or showing or sharing. And so I had to tell him, listen, you don't work for him, you work for me. And I've got all my stuff on, and we're going to operate this way, and this is how we're going to do it. Like, I don't really care what he's doing. But I never, again, that's that landmine leadership. I never wanted to be that guy for our people, you know. I just didn't want to be that way. And so, you know, when I made staff, I think I'm one of the only ones that carries an air pack in my car. Right? Why? Because if I'm on a fire scene, I'm going to be in gear with an air pack because that's the expectation, right? There's no half dress, there's no and you know, the other part is, you know, I'm willing to try it. I'm willing to put in a rep. And you know, we've cultivated leaders that are the same way. The BC that took my seat the captain that promoted into that, I was out with him the other day and we were talking and he said, "Man, I'm just struggling. I want to get a rep in, but I don't want to take it from the guys." And I said, "Well, get in a rep. If you want to get a rep, tell them, hey, I want to get a rep. Don't, but also remember you got to give them room, And I did that early on and I would train right alongside them and I still try to as much as I can, but I also got to give room for the next generation of leaders to be the example and to show that and to just help support that, But we're a service business and I just don't feel like it can be done from the luxury of my office, you know what I mean? Or from like a command center. It's like you got to be on the battleground with the guys. Like you got to be invested to the level, My last fire that I had as a BC, we came as close as I've ever come to possibly killing a bunch of people. We kept him in. I kept him in probably far too long, because I'm trying to trust my folks, but I kind of knew where the fire was going and it was rolling into that defensive mode and nothing was jiving the way that it needed to. And I finally said, "Hey man, guys, that's it. Let's come out." And I'm not kidding you. I've got video of it. I mean, the guys are starting to come down the stairs and come out through the garage and the whole second floor is collapsing in on itself. It's as close as we've ever come. But I wasn't at the buggy. I wasn't sitting in the front seat. I was in the front yard watching and all of those little nuances, all of the things where I'm starting to see fire poke through here or, brick fall here or any of these other things that go together. Like I got to be invested at that level for their success if I'm going to put them in that level of risk. You know what I mean? I got to be willing, if something's not going right and the line's not advancing, maybe to slinging a mask on and getting up the staircase and going, "Cap, what is going on? Why is the line not moving?" Sometimes you got to be willing to do that. I think in order to be successful, and especially if you're going to be an aggressive organization, and we are, and so we operate that way.
Love it. Love it. Love it, Chief. My last question to you, where would you like to see yourself before you decide to hang it up?
I don't know. I mean, I'm in school right now, and I'm trying to. What I've learned, if we go back to my wife saying you're an idiot, go have the meeting, is don't pass up an opportunity, right? So I don't know what, I had the plan through captain. That was kind of it. Like I had said, I remember in fire school saying, "Man, I want to be a captain on a truck company." Like I knew that. I love truck work. I wanted to be associated with that. The guys out west, were LA City, LA County guys that taught my academy. And like, that was the kind of truck captain I wanted to be. And at 31, it was like, okay, now it's done. Now what? And I haven't had a roadmap for anything else. I'm just like I said, for my folks, I'm trying to match opportunity. And so we'll kind of see what happens, But I think the way to keep the doors open is to stay in it, to stay educated, to match, I coined a term this year, forcing open the door of opportunity, right? And that's what I'm trying to do, So we'll see.
Okay. I know I told you, no, you're fine. I know I told you this is the last question, but I'm going to kick myself if I don't ask you this. So this is the final question though. You mentioned the term aggressive. So with you being the chief of training, what does that term mean to you and for your organization?
So, I mean, it's written into our policies about aggression, right? It's actually expected. And today, being Friday, we do a thing called Frederick's Friday. And Justin Fraes, I don't know if you know him, he wrote an article today, sent it out to our organization about aggression. And he hits the nail on the head, and Chief also hit the nail on the head with it, as far as it's the level in which we operate and it's the speed and the execution of how we do things that matches to the enemy that we're fighting, right? And takes into consideration those that we're protecting. And so It's not reckless. It's not out of control. You know, we removed the word safety from almost every single policy that we have. Excuse me. Allergies are killing me. But we replaced that with risk. And so you got to manage the risk. And the way that you manage the risk is through training and through competency, right? And I've always said to my guys, you know, that's if you want a longer leash, train. Right? Like, if you want me to give you a longer leash on scene, if you want me to let you stay in there longer, if you want me to let you stay on the roof longer and cut another hole, like any of the things, if you want to vent in or search, then train. Show the proficiency, show me that you're capable of doing it, put in the work, then it's not reckless. Like, right? We're not risking as much because you're trained to do that very thing. It looks risky to everybody else that doesn't do it, but that's the aggressive side, right? And for our guys, you know, and I love it, it's about having a little bit of swagger. You got to give them that, man. Like, you know, not like just ego, but like it's earned, you know? And I go back to what they said when he came into the department, when Chief came, they wanted to be respected. Like, we've gotten there, you know? And now it's like, what does the next 10 or 15 years look like for our organization? Where do we take it from here? You know, and how do we keep growing? But I don't think aggressive is a bad word. And I think it's just a matter of like how we approach the problems that we do, you know, and the ownership that you take in it. Like, it's easy to say, man, I ain't risking my guys today when it ain't your family inside, right?
That's a fact.
Totally changes if it's yours. And I used to ask people, and I, you know, I think Chief Nick Martin talks about it. You know, he says when he goes into a fire department, he knows if they're tuned up in like 30 seconds. And it's like, well, how do you figure that out? Like, he sees how your gear's set up, right? Like, if your gear's all set up, the radio strap's already set up, everything's set up for you to like respond, or is it set up for an EMS call? Is it all folded up in the rig? Right? That's part of aggression. It's how we approach the day, and it's how we approach the problems. Is it's in every little nuance that we do, you know? So I don't know. That's kind of it in a nutshell.
Love it, love it, love it, love it, Chief. I want to say thank you for taking the time coming on, spreading the good word. Any into the job fireman's gonna love this
Did you have
episode.
fun?
Absolutely did.
Yeah.
I mean, right now I'm ready to run through a damn wall and join Colony if I could.
I
If you
love
guys
it.
are hiring, I knew this would go the way it would be because. Just I got the pleasure to meet Chief Scott Thompson at Jimmy Ellis, and the way he talks, you can see why he is dubbed what he's dubbed on social media. He breathes it, he believes it, and it's very infectious because you can see it's within his department. So I just want to say, and I don't think I have to worry about you ever changing. Keep that mindset that you have, and I believe if you decide moving forward, hey, a fire chief position opens up wherever, you would be jam up at it.
Well, keep me in mind, man. North Carolina could be a fun place, right? Maybe we get out that direction.
I can do that for you,
Yeah,
100%, 100%.
my wife works for the bank, and that's their hub out there in Charlotte.
Oh,
So
so she works for Bank of America.
that's right, man. So
Gotcha. Gotcha.
that could always be a thing, man. I keep those doors open, you know.
Will do, Chief. Like I said, thank you very much for doing this.
Yeah, thanks, Danny. I appreciate it.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.